All right, welcome to the Young Turks. I think I'm over here. Anyways, okay. We got a great show ahead for you guys. We have in the second hour disastrous results from Weinstein revelations, Harvey Weinstein, I should say. And should all Democrats apologize for ever taking his money, including Hillary Clinton? That is a very interesting conversation. We'll get to that a little bit later. Should Donald Trump be removed from office using the 25th Amendment? We will also get to that later. A hell of a show for you guys. Hell of a show for you, Brownie, in the words of George W. Bush in the old days. And one more tease for you guys. TYT Investigates breaks his first story. And ladies and gentlemen, we got him. Two of the biggest companies caught in what is, at a minimum, greatly misleading statements. So let's get started. Oh, we're starting over here and going over there. That's a switch. That's different. Okay. For the radio audience, you guys are super confused. We are switching cameras. Okay. So there it is. I just explained it. Now you understand the initial confusion. Everybody's moving along with their lives. Because I don't know if you guys have noticed this, but lately I'm starting with funny Trump stories in the beginning. Get them out of the way a little bit, but have fun. All right. So here we go. Lindsey Graham was a rival of Donald Trump during the 2016 primaries. You might not know that because he had a miserable showing. He was obliterated by Trump. But in doing so, Trump humiliated him, embarrassed him in almost every imaginable way. He even doxed him. So remember, it's Donald J. Troll. He's the king of the trolls. Not only did he troll Lindsey Graham, but he gave out his private phone number while on the campaign trail. It was unbelievable. The things that he said about him were horrible, horrific, etc. And remember, Lindsey Graham's best friend in the Senate is John McCain. And Trump famously said, I prefer people who weren't captured about John McCain, which is unreal. So later, Lindsey Graham went on to have many agreements and disagreements with Donald Trump. But apparently, they were golfing just a day ago. And so Lindsey Graham sent out this tweet. Really enjoyed a round of golf with President Trump today. President Trump shot a 73 in windy and wet conditions! Exclamation point. So this is deeply embarrassing. Now he's kissing his ass. There's a second tweet that's even worse. I'm going to read it to you at the end. But let's pause here to note that it is inconceivable that Donald Trump shot a 73 in ideal conditions, let alone windy and wet and all the things that Graham said. So I thought I remembered that that President Trump was a notorious liar about golf, let alone everything else in the world. So I went back and researched it. Yes, Golf Magazine has an article about how no one could ever verify any of his golf claims. He claimed once that he had won 18 different golf championships. When they went and looked around and asked around, not one could be verified. To which I say, of course, of course. He keeps claiming that he broke the record on his own course several times, but there are no signed cards to indicate that. It goes on and on. But then I found a Washington Post article where they went back through time to chronicle all the different ways that Donald Trump cheats. And by the way, there's upsides to Trump on golfing. Apparently, he's a fun guy to hang out with, unless of course you're a woman. And he tips well to the caddies, and apparently the caddies help him cheat. And that this is a well-known fact in his courses. If you get Donald Trump, make sure that you take his ball and you throw it into the middle of the fairway, and you'll get a better tip that way. Anyway, we go back to the mid-1990s, and I've got to throw out all the years for you. He was talking to Mark Mulvoy. In fact, he was golfing with him. Mark Mulvoy is the managing editor of Sports Illustrated at the time. And Mulvoy says to him, wait a minute, your ball wasn't there. It wasn't even remotely there. Trump responds, the guys I play with cheat all the time. I have to cheat just to keep up with them. Okay. All right. Then we go to 2012. Alice Cooper, when asked about other celebrities that he golfs with, said, the worst celebrity golf cheat? I wish I could tell you that. It would be a shocker. I played with Donald Trump one time. That's all I'm going to say. So obviously it was Donald Trump. All of this way before he ever ran for president. Okay. In 2004, he was talking to another sports writer, Rick Riley, who actually wound up writing a book about golf that included Donald Trump. Riley said, When it comes to cheating, he's an 11 on a scale of 1 to 10. Again, none of this has any political motivations. Back in 2004, Trump has never even talked about running for president. It has nothing to do with politics. Just everyone who encounters him in golf is like, whoa, that guy's an unbelievable cheater. So there's all these stories of just throwing balls in the middle of the fairway, just making up a different score and putting it on his card than the one he shot. So being outside the green and saying, yeah, that's a gimme, and just picking it up. You're not even on the green. Okay, so it goes on and on. But again, Rick Riley does say, hey, wait. He says, he's exhausting, but I want to be clear, I really liked him. It was just like being in a crazy carnival for a day, though I'm not sure it would be so much fun when it starts to count. That was 13 years ago. Boy, did he nail that. Well, it has started to count, and this carnival is not fun, and I'd like to get off this ride. But I'm not Lindsey Graham. So we finish back with the second tweet of Lindsey Graham. How bad did he beat me? I did better in presidential race than today on the golf course. Great fun, great host. Look, Donald Trump is a pathetic, insecure egomaniac. The only thing worse is when he unmans you. And when you have groveling, pathetic politicians like Lindsey Graham, who after taking a beating, I mean, that's an open-handed slap, boy, and he did it to you how many times? And then you come back and you do this, and you offer your hand to him, and you bow before him and go, oh my God, he's such a great golfer. He beat me so bad, like when during the race. Oh my, oh God, Donnie Trump, please give my donors tax cuts. I've been working for them for decades, and they really need those tax cuts. I'll say anything, Donnie. I'll help you lie about your golf score. Please, Donnie. Lindsey Graham, you're one of the saddest, saddest people I have ever seen. You're lucky Ted Cruz is still around, so you're not at the very bottom of the barrel. All right. Oh, these politicians, they're the worst. They're the worst. Except for perhaps NFL owners, which is what brings us to our next story. Now, Donald Trump's been on the warpath fighting to make sure that NFL players are not protesting police brutality. Now, this is a very important issue, slash one that he decided to take on when there are far more important issues that a president should be talking about. Actually, if he cared about police brutality, that would be a monumental issue to talk about one way or another. But he never talks about that. He just pretends as if the kneeling during the football games that Colin Kaepernick started is somehow meant as a sign of disrespect to the flag, the anthem, or our veterans. Now, none of the players ever said that. They're very clear. They're worried about police brutality, the shooting of unarmed African Americans, and unfortunately systematic racism and systemic racism. And so Trump comes out and has been saying, oh yeah, well make sure they get fired if they complain about racism. Well, given that you're the most powerful guy in the country and you're the president of the United States and leader of the government, that is a deeply disturbing thing to say and might be unconstitutional. But he has more, and what I'm about to tell you unfortunately is devastating, because he has won on this issue. At least for the moment being, I'll explain. So he tweeted just a little while ago, why is the NFL getting massive tax breaks while at the same time disrespecting our anthem, flag, and country? Change tax law. Now, unfortunately, just yesterday on the program, I largely predicted that this is exactly what was going on, because I noticed that Jerry Jones and Ross, the owner of the Dolphins, had already capitulated and had bound down to Trump. And I thought, well, they're not going to do that and change their position as they both did, unless there's money on the line. Here's what I said yesterday. This is about Jerry Jones. Now, it's obvious that the White House has gone to a lot of the owners and said, hey, remember, you guys are billionaire Republicans. I don't know the internal conversations, but probably had conversations about, hey, you know, the taxpayers subsidize you guys. It's called crony capitalism. We Republicans love it, and we've been practicing it with you for a long time. Plus, I've got $1 trillion tax cuts coming. Would you like some of that? Or would you like me to, you know, make sure that the NFL owners are left out? I don't know that for sure, okay? Well, turns out I was right again. And I don't say that to rub it in, although that's fun. No, I'm telling you because this is how politics works. Follow the money and you'll have your answer. You two can figure it out. Apparently the only people who can't figure it out are usually TV pundits. Anyway, so yesterday I told you that he might threaten tax issues. Today he proves me right by threatening tax issues. Now, he's kind of wrong about this. I'm gonna go to Talking Points memo here. They explain that the NFL gave up its tax exempt status in 2015, leaving it unclear which tax breaks Trump would be looking to eliminate. The league does see tax breaks when building stadiums, but those are granted by local governments, not the federal government. Now, you think Donald Trump knows that distinction? Are you positive Donald Trump knows the difference between the federal, state, and local governments? So the idea that he would know the complicated case, it's actually not that complicated, but the tax structure that allows those NFL owners to have their tax breaks, he doesn't know which part of the government's responsible for that. So we found out later that it turns out he was watching Fox News. And Tucker Carlson had on an expert who talked about how they should take away tax subsidies from all these sports teams. Well, in the Fox News segment, they didn't mention that the NFL had already voluntarily given up their federal government tax break, which by the way was not much of a tax break in that case. It barely affected the teams. The much bigger ones, like I said, are at the local level. And so, but Trump doesn't know any of that. He just watched Fox News and he said, oh yeah, that's right. Let's punish him with the taxes, right? So now, to be fair, you know, this happens all Monday night. And so in what I was mentioning on yesterday's program, it appears that, you know, I should have never given him credit for any degree of negotiations or sophistication. He actually did not do it privately. He just chose to do it later publicly. But Jerry Jones and the owner of the Dolphins, being smart guys, figured out that's where he's going with this thing. And there's a ton of money on the line, so we better not mess around with this guy. So how very, very brave of them. And then Trump tweets, a big salute to Jerry Jones, owner of the Dallas Cowboys, who will bench players who disrespect our flag, stand for the anthem, or sit for the game. Now, I think that all NFL players, it's absolutely the time to take a bold stand. And they should all kneel in unison and look. The white players, man, are you guys teammates or are you not? Now, I mean, how many times do we have to go through these stats? Black Americans are shot disproportionately by the police. They smoke marijuana, as an example, at the same rate as whites, but are arrested at 4 times the rate of whites. Do you think that your fellow teammates are making that up? Do you think that their experience is not valid, that you know better than them, even though you didn't live their life? No, you guys are supposed to be teammates. Stand together, or in this case, take a knee together. So letting Jerry Jones intimidate you and say he's gonna sit you, really? You're gonna sit Ezekiel Elliott? You're gonna sit Dak Prescott? You're gonna sit Dez Bryant? You're gonna sit all those guys? You're gonna sit all the white players too? And all the rest of the owners that are now, as you'll see in a second, are beginning to think about doing this for the entire league. You're gonna sit Tom Brady? You're gonna sit Aaron Rodgers? Be bold, take a stand. And this isn't just now about police brutality. It's also about how the government is trying to use its power to violate our Constitution. Because it is not unconstitutional for Jerry Jones to say that he's gonna hurt his own financial interest by sitting his players who are taking a knee. He's a private owner, he can do that. But when the government, in the form of Donald Trump, says, I will give you financial penalties if you don't do as I say and punish people for their speech, well then yes, we definitely have a constitutional issue. That is the core of the First Amendment. So how much could he hurt the NFL owners if he wanted? Trump's proposed tax plan would be a huge boost to the NFL, as it would cut the tax rates that NFL owners pay from 40% to 25%. That is billions of dollars on the line, not millions, billions. So all of a sudden the NFL owners go, oh, my players that I pretended to care about earlier, oh, they're getting shot by the cops disproportionately. I mean, it happened to Michael Bennett just the other day. He didn't get shot, thank God. But in Vegas, he was thrown down on the ground, a loaded gun put to his head by a police officer. They picked him out of a crowd after people thought there was shots fired and everybody's running. They're like, okay, that big black guy is also running along with everyone else. He's the one we're gonna tackle. They put a gun to his head and said, we'll effing kill you. And the owners pretended to care about that. Now they go, wait, did you say there's money on the line? Forget it, I'm bowing down to Donald Trump. Don't care about my players at all. So now to give you a sense of how much money's on the line at the local level, according to ESPN's Kevin Seifert, the public has gifted nearly $7 billion to the NFL for stadium building in the past two decades alone. So Trump could use his local allies to push that lever. He could exempt the NFL owners from the tax cuts. There's antitrust laws that the NFL is exempt from. So there's a lot of different levers that you could put to punish the NFL for supporting their players in this important issue. And Trump has now openly threatened to do that in brazen violation of the Constitution. And so what is the reaction of the owners? Well, Roger Goodell put out a statement today filled with, oh, we respect our players and kind of give a crap about them, but not really, because at the heart of the statement, he said, like many of our fans, we believe that everyone should stand for the national anthem. It is an important monument, it is an important moment in our game. We want to honor our flag and our country, and our fans expect that of us. So now the reality is, it was not an important moment in any NFL game until 2009. The players and the teams were all in the locker rooms all the way through 2008 while the anthem was being sung. Do you know why they're out in the field now? Because in 2009, the Department of Defense started paying millions of dollars to the NFL for false acts of patriotism so that they could enlist more people. And then they would try to get people to sign up during halftime. They'd have military jets fly over, and they paid the NFL for that. So in 2009 is when all of this began, and the NFL, looking to make money, said, oh yeah, sure, we'll be patriotic. It's a really important moment in our games. We used to be in the locker room before, it was never important, but now that you're paying me, it's important. Now Donald Trump says, I might take some of your money away or give you more in terms of tax cuts. And all of a sudden, the NFL owners go, yeah, just kidding. Never ever cared about racism, never ever cared about our players. All we care about is the almighty dollar. And so I get it, they're incredibly greedy. They're almost all billionaires. They don't care, they want more, they always want more. But it's also craven. It's also sad and pathetic. So if I was a billionaire and this guy's gonna try to push me around, how much money of mine can you take away? How much can you punish me? So Jerry Jones, you're supposed to be a tough guy. You walk around Dallas like you own the place. When in reality, you got nothing but tax breaks to build that stadium, that you made the city of Arlington own it. You made all these sweetheart deals where the taxpayers pay for everything, you don't pay for it. You're ripping off the people of Texas left and right. Then you pretend to be with the players by taking a knee before the anthem in one of the games. Now you turn around and say that you're gonna ruin their career because Donald Trump threatened you, you bitch, you miserable, pathetic loser coward. That's who you are, Jerry Jones. So don't ever pretend going around like you're a real man strutting. And it's super easy to threaten people with less power than you. But the minute somebody showed up with what you perceive to be slightly more power than you, like a dog, you actually knelt before him. You didn't kneel in protest, you didn't kneel in prayer. You knelt because you're a lesser man. He unmanned you and you said, yes sir, may I have another. That's who you are, Jerry Jones. Now, Roger Goodell's statement is an ominous one and is perhaps a preview of the formal decision that they're gonna make next week when they get together. But now we know, and Roger Goodell does not act without most of the owners on his side. He's the commissioner. Most of the owners apparently are dogs like Jerry Jones. They're scared of an orange buffoon like Donald Trump. Donald Trump's gonna be in office for only a little while longer, but your shame and your embarrassment and your humiliation will last forever. Enjoy it, Young Turks. All right, back on the Young Turks. Let me read some tweets for you guys. Matthew Reed says, unfortunately, I don't think most NFL players will stand united when their jobs are on the line. Well, look, that's why they punished Kaepernick the way that they did. That's why they haven't let him back in the league, because it's to send a message. You are not allowed to stand up for yourself. You're not allowed to stand up for your community. And if you do, we'll ruin your career. That's who the NFL owners are. The Mad Lib writes in, does anybody really believe the NFL would exist without black people? Hashtag take a knee. That's right. So, I mean, look. Three players for the Dolphins, we talked about this in the second hour yesterday, three players for the Dolphins refused to stand for the anthem. And their coach kept him in the locker room, wouldn't let him come out for the anthem. So humiliating. You're not allowed to have a voice if you play for the Dolphins. Look, if I was them, I wouldn't talk about it at all, especially the Cowboys players. Sure, the Dolphins players, because they were the first two owners to be despicable enough to say that they're going to punish people if they don't agree with their opinions. Go out there, and as soon as the anthem starts playing, all take a knee. How many games is Jerry Jones really going to bench Dak Prescott and Ezekiel Elliott and Dez Bryant? I'll tell you, not very fucking many. How many losses is he willing to tolerate? Not very fucking many. So do it, man. But I don't know if they'll have the courage to do it. Okay, one last thing. One Life writes in at YouTube Super Chat. NFL protest exposes how little regard Republicans have for our Constitution. They rather enforce or advocate for strict obedience to authority at the expense of personal freedom. I think Hassan did a video about this on Facebook for us over the weekend, or just yesterday. So there was two protests over the weekend, the NFL one obviously, and then there was the white nationalist one in Charlottesville. And what's the one that got Donald Trump really upset? Not the neo-Nazi one, nope, and that got a lot of press too. No, it's black players saying, hey, can you please stop shooting black people? That's what really made Donald Trump angry. So you get a sense of what their priorities are. And by the way, if you want to watch that video, that's facebook.com/TheYoungTurks. Okay, all right, let's talk about how stupid the president is. So you guys know that there was a dust up last week where apparently Rex Tillerson, the Secretary of State, had privately called Donald Trump a moron, or perhaps an effing moron. He came out and did a groveling press conference, but never actually denied that he called him a moron. Later he sent out a spokesperson to say that he didn't call him a moron, but the country was left unconvinced. Apparently so was Donald Trump. Now, of course, he blamed it on fake news, and he's doing that again today. But apparently he believes it enough that he wanted to counter it. So he said today, I think it's fake news, but if he did that, I guess we'll have to compare IQ tests and I can tell you who's going to win. Look, we've gotten used to how incredibly stupid the president is and what a child he is and what an egomaniac he is, and we're all sick of it. But just stop for a second and think about how insane that is. We shouldn't be used to it. If President Obama said, oh yeah, I'm smarter than my Secretary of State, John Kerry, for example. Oh yeah, I'll be John Kerry in an IQ test. I mean, it would have been by far the biggest scandal of his 8 years. People would have thought he was nuts. The Republicans would have started impeachment proceedings. They would have had hearing after hearing, and the press would talk about it nonstop. Now, it's not like the press didn't cover this. They absolutely did. I'm just saying, I don't want you to get used to how insane the president is. He keeps saying things like,
you know, I'm like a smart person.
There are no actual smart people who go around saying, I'm like a smart person. He said that on two different occasions. Now he challenges his own Secretary of State to an IQ test, which by the way, please Rex Tillerson, take him up on it. Look, my guess is, and I don't know this, is that if he ever took an IQ test, they never told him the results. His dad and mom probably were like, oh, tell Donnie he did great. And they're like, Donnie, you did great. And he's like, yes, I did great. I'm great at IQ. You're one of the dumbest people that has ever been in the public sphere. But you're so dumb, you don't know how dumb you are. So I used to say this about George Bush, but now he makes George Bush look like a rocket scientist. He was born on third base and thought he kicked a field goal. That's how dumb Donald Trump is. Who says I'm going to do an IQ test against my own Secretary of State? You're also calling the Secretary of State dumb, but you're the one who picked him. So what does that make you? You know, but you know, some people think maybe he's got dementia or something. No, no, no. He's always been this crazy. Back in 2013, this is a tweet that he sent out. Sorry, losers and haters, but my IQ is one of the highest, and you all know it. Please don't feel so stupid or insecure. It's not your fault. I mean, if my third grader wrote that, how much would I punish him? I mean, I would say, what kind of a monster am I raising to taunt people like that? But this is the guy. guy who wound up becoming president of the United States, and he's still doing it. It's just painful to think about. Can you imagine Bill Gates coming out going, "Oh yeah, you losers and haters, my IQ's so high." Of course Bill Gates wouldn't do that. You know why? Because he's actually smart. No smart person goes around saying that. Can you imagine Einstein, "Oh yeah, come on. Come on, you bitches, you cucks, you betas. Let's do IQ tests, I'm Einstein." Elon Musk, Warren Buffett, you name it. You name any smart person, they don't talk like that. Because they actually have intelligence. This child, this buffoon is the most powerful person on earth. We gotta get him out. We gotta get him out. He's a danger to the whole world. What an insane, pathetic lunatic. All right, that's story number one. Story number two, by the way, mainstream media I hear is, you know, they criticize Huffington Post for during the campaign talking about how he lies and yada yada. Oh, you shouldn't say that. What, are we supposed to be neutral to this fucking maniac? Anyway, let's go to the next story on this along those lines. All right. Now, I'm no fan of Bob Corker. I think he's a deeply right wing. He votes the wrong way almost every time. He's a Republican senator from Tennessee. Now he's in a beef with Donald Trump. He's right about this one. The only way that he got right is by being less wrong than Donald Trump. So Trump had attacked him. So of course, who doesn't Trump attack? Because apparently during his dust up with Tillerson, Corker supported Tillerson and said Tillerson's one of the few guys keeping us away from chaos. Trump, of course, with his incredibly thin skin, took that personally and decided that he was going to attack Corker publicly, which is unbelievable. Even if the senator was in an opposing party, it would be unbelievable. In your own party, it is unprecedented. And he went around saying that, oh yeah, you know, I wouldn't endorse him, and that's why he got out of the race and he didn't have the guts to run. Of course, all of those were lies. What's new? So now, after Corker gave the interview to the New York Times saying he's worried about Trump accidentally starting World War III, and that everybody at the White House is on pins and needles trying to make sure that he doesn't drive off the road every single day, Trump, of course, gets even more angry and he tweets out, "The failing New York Times set little Bob Corker up by recording his conversation, was made to sound a fool, and that's what I'm dealing with." So he's got a new nickname for Bob Corker. It's ingenious, little Bob Corker. Bob is apparently 5'7". You got him. Boy, that's clever. I should never question your IQ again. If Obama were to say, "Hey, little Chuck Schumer, you got tricked, you idiot." Biggest scandal in 8 years of his administration, but he would never do that because he's an actual smart person and that has any sense at all. So now, is it true that the New York Times tricked him? Of course not, of course not. Go to Talking Points memo on this. The Times' Jonathan Martin, who conducted the interview, said Tuesday that Corker had two aides on the line, also recording, and they made sure after it ended that it was that I was taping too. According to the Times transcript of the interview, Corker noted it at its start, quote, "I understand we're on the record." See, but again, Trump doesn't have the mental capacity to understand anything. So if you're talking to a New York Times reporter, are you on the record? Of course you're on the record. He called them to be on the record. They didn't dupe him, he wasn't tricked. But Trump is too much of a child to understand it. He's like, thank God, man, they were recording it. So, I got you, little Bob. Oh God, mentally challenged. We're gonna talk about that in a second. On Tuesday, the Times published audio of Corker telling Martin, referring to the senator's aides, quote, "I know they're recording it and I hope you are too." Of course. All right, now one little side note here. Don't worry, and that's why we got jokers to the left of me and clowns to the right of me, and I'm stuck in the little with you. Anyway, so is it gonna hurt their efforts at tax cuts? Now look, Corker says, "I don't know, I'm really concerned about $1.5 trillion that it would add to the deficit." Maybe if he takes it personally enough, but reality, and he's not running. If he was running again, he'd be like, "Oh, the donors want it, oh yes sir, absolutely sir." But Trump is sure that it won't affect the tax cuts because of greed. Anyway, here's what he had to say about that.
Are you concerned that the Bob Corker dispute will affect tax reform at all, sir?
I don't think so. No, I don't think so at all. I think we're well on our way. It's very, the people of this country want tax cuts. They want lower taxes. We're the highest taxed nation in the world.
None of that is true. We are not remotely the highest tax nation on earth, and the people of this country do not want tax cuts. In fact, they huge majorities of the country want tax increases on corporations and the rich. So all that's an absolute lie, but likely he'll get Corker's vote anyway, because no matter how much he's personally aggrieved by Donald Trump, he is bought and paid for by the donors. So, but this is not the first time that he's gone after Corker and his height. He apparently used it to make really important decisions. This is even more mental. It's Peter Baker of the New York Times reporting this. In labeling Mr. Corker little, the president was evidently returning to a theme. He considered Mr. Corker for Secretary of State during the transition after last year's election, but was reported to have told associates that Mr. Corker at 5'7" was too short to be the nation's top diplomat. This is how the guy makes decisions. No matter how many times I hear it and see it, it's unbelievable every time. He said that he was considering Mitt Romney for Secretary of State because he looked like he was out of central casting and he looked like he was right for the role. Mitt Romney devastated you during the elections. Yeah, but he looks right. He apparently did not consider Chris Christie. There's a number of reasons. One of them was that he was overweight. He doesn't trust anyone who's overweight and looks slovenly. Dude, you're overweight. Have you ever seen yourself golfing? But no. This is how he makes decisions, based on people's appearances, not their intellect, not their experience, not whether they're right for the job. He's an absolute child. Recently, a group of esteemed psychiatrists came out with a letter asking Congress to please act. Now, they of course did not analyze him. They didn't give specific therapy to him. No one apparently has. He says he doesn't like introspection because he literally said he wouldn't want to know what he would find out about himself. Well, that's a rare thing he was honest about. But anyway, they put out this letter saying, it no longer takes a psychiatrist to recognize the alarming patterns of impulsive, reckless, and narcissistic behavior, regardless of diagnosis, that in the person of President Trump put the world at risk. We now find ourselves in a clear and present danger, especially concerning North Korea and the president's command of the US nuclear arsenal. So in essence, some of the most esteemed psychiatrists in the country, including professors and psychiatrists from Yale and other top colleges, saying, for God's sake, somebody do something. This guy is obviously not mentally stable. Section 4 of the 25th Amendment reads as such. Whenever the vice president and a majority of either principal officers of the executive departments or of such other body as Congress may by law provide, transmit to the president pro temp of the Senate and the Speaker of the House of Representatives their written declaration that the president is unable to discharge the powers and duties of his office, the vice president shall immediately assume the powers and duties of office as acting president. This guy does not have the mental capacity to be president. I'm sorry to report that this is an issue that I was a little bit wrong about before. I think I voted no on this poll, explaining, hey, this is a bad precedent. We asked you guys in a poll we did earlier, tytnetwork.com/25th. Is the president stable enough and should Trump be disqualified from the presidency for mental incompetence? I didn't want this standard being used against people based on whether we just disagreed with them or that they were just because they were unintelligent. Otherwise, Bush should have been taken out of office as well, and the establishment can use that against others. So I voted no, that he should not be disqualified. Well, you guys disagreed with me because 70% of you voted yes. We're going to keep that voting open and I'm switching my vote. So he does not have the mental capacity to be president of the United States. It is an absolute danger to the world that he has the nuclear arsenal at his disposal. He is a man-child. To go around calling fellow Republican senators little Bob Corker, to not choose them for important posts based on their height, to attack them over and over again with pathological lying, and to sink to this level when you're the president of the United States, are you really, even if you're a Republican, even if you're a deep right winger, you're really confident about the decisions he's going to make on the world stage? That if Kim Jong-un or any other world leader insults him in the wrong way, that he's not going to launch? You're positive? Really? No, you're not. Everybody watching knows that you have no idea what Donald Trump's going to do. You know why? Because Donald Trump doesn't know what he's going to do. It depends on the moment, as Bob Corker explained, from all of his sources inside the Republican caucus and inside the White House. They're all scared to death what he might do minute by minute, because he constantly changes his mind. All he cares about is his own ego. He goes down to Puerto Rico, throws towels at people, and then says, they loved me, they were cheering me. Focus on the hurricane, the people who lost their lives in the recovery. No, but it was a great moment for me. I had politicians praising me. Oh, it was terrific. It was crazy how great it was. This guy does not have the capacity to be president. God knows what he's going to do. You don't know what he's going to do from moment to moment. And he has nukes at his disposal. We got to get him out. So, I don't know. Vote in the poll, tytnetwork.com/25th. More importantly, if you're inside the White House, you're inside Congress, for God's sake, do something. Bob Corker, you just let everybody know that most of the Republicans actually believe that he's a danger to the world and might accidentally start World War III. Then do something about it. You're a United States Senator. You have the power to begin these proceedings. There already exists a bill in the House. Jamie Raskin proposed it. It's already got a couple of dozen sponsors. It's got to have more. Because it isn't about a simple disagreement. It isn't about a person who's not that bright. Otherwise, you'd have to disqualify most of the Republican presidents. But this is something different. It's at a different level. There's something wrong with him. We got to get him out. I know I keep saying it, but look, I'll say one last thing about it. Everybody thinks, oh, it's politics and you guys don't like him and that's why you want to get him and ha ha and he won and you guys are this or you guys are that. And the stock market, by the way, the greed is endless. It just goes up every single day, all right? Because they're like, who cares, danger to the world, blah, 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 blah. I'm gonna get trillions in tax cuts. Okay, I know in your avarice and in your endless greed, you're looking forward to those tax cuts. But we're not kidding, and you're gonna see it, and it's gonna be the thing that I'm most upset that I'm right about. He's gonna do something monstrous. That's who he is. He has no bounds. There is no bottom to the barrel. He has no intellect whatsoever. He's gonna do something monumentally stupid that is gonna hurt the whole planet. I mean, forget the fact that he's already done it on a long-term path with climate change, etc. I'm not talking about that. I'm not talking about regular politics. You are underestimating how stupid he is. You're underestimating what a sociopath he is. He is going to do something that is going to hurt the whole world. It is going to be inarguable. It isn't about politics. You got to get him out. Tick tock, tick tock. Are you kidding me? Mike Pence is actually way more conservative than Donald Trump. Mike Pence is way more competent than Donald Trump. Mike Pence might actually get some conservative ideas passed. I'm telling you, go to Mike Pence. This isn't about politics. This is about this guy who's going to ruin millions of lives. I hope to God I'm wrong, but I'm not. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, I'll tell you about those cherished tax cuts that they're endangering the whole world for. And what a lie it is that they're going to add to jobs. We actually did an investigation. We found out what the real plans of these businesses are. And I'm going to share that with you when we come back. All right, back on the Young Turks, Brian Newton writes, since Trump sounds like every right-wing troll I've ever heard on Twitter. He is. He's the king of the trolls. I Am Sock says, how crazy is it that I'm cheering for Bob fucking Corker? Pretty crazy, and I agree with you. Antonio Williams writes, I am the king, Joffrey. Any man that says that is no true king. Tywin, remind you of anyone? That's right. Well, that's why I keep calling him Joffrey, because that's who he is. And at least in Game of Thrones, they had enough sense to get rid of him. Now, I don't want it done that way, okay? But let's make sure that there's political governance. Look, last thing on that, for today at least, I have the same ominous feeling today that I had on the Saturday before the election. The Saturday before the election, you go back and look, read my tweets, and you could ask anybody. I called Ben, Michael, I called everybody I knew, going, shit, man, guys, I got a real bad feeling he's going to win. I got a real bad feeling about it. And I kept saying to you guys, they're underestimating him, populism's going to beat the establishment, etc. And right now, I got a real bad feeling that the whole country, the media, the Republicans, the Democrats, they are underestimating him again, but this time on the damage he can do. They just think, oh, it's all fun and games and tweets. No, he's going to do horrible, horrible damage any day now. Again, I hope to God I'm wrong. Okay, all right, let's go to the next story. We got a fun intro on this one, so let's roll it. So this is our new segment on TYT called Con Jobs. It is to explain how so-called tax reform is actually tax cuts, and it's for multinational corporations. And it does not create jobs, it actually oftentimes kills jobs. Now, they will say that it creates jobs, both the Republican Party, some of the corporate Democrats, and a lot of the business leaders, but that is not how they actually act. So we are doing investigations to find out what they're actually doing. That's, we have a whole new division of the Young Turks called TYT Investigates, and you should check them out, tytnetwork.com/investigates, and they bring you this story. We'll have the link to the story in the description box below, wherever you're watching. Today is their first story in this series, and they talk about FedEx and UPS, which are actually among the top 10 companies in terms of number of employees in the world. So that's a big deal. And so if they are actually going to hire more people, wow, that would be news and that would be great. So first of all, they keep saying that, oh my God, taxes are way too high and that's why we're not able to hire people. Well, is that true? So we looked into that. Well, this is in the Obama years from 2008 to 2016. FedEx does not list its US employee numbers in its SEC filings, but in its report for fiscal year 2016, it reported 353,000 employees globally, up from 213,500 in the fiscal year 2008. UPS went from reporting 340,000 US employees in fiscal year 2008 to reporting 355,000 in fiscal year 2016. So FedEx added a ton of jobs, but we can't quite tell because of their filings if it's all in the US or mostly outside the country. But they, no question, they added jobs, they did not cut jobs. And the time that they were complaining about, oh, taxes are too high, we can't add any jobs. UPS clearly added jobs in that same time period. That's when they say taxes are too high, okay? So now, if taxes are too high and they don't have enough money to hire people, that's potentially possible. And almost everybody in TV dutifully reports that, yes, of course, well, the taxes being high means you hire less people and vice versa. So is that true, that they didn't have enough money? Well, we looked into that as well. Steve Horn, by the way, writing this story for TYT. Neither company has claimed a lack of resources to hire new employees. At UPS, last year's dividend payments amounted to $2.8 billion. It had $3.546 billion in cash on hand and paid their CEO $13.7 million, according to a UPS proxy statement filed in March, up more than 20% from the previous year. FedEx paid their CEO $15.6 million in compensation in fiscal year 2017, according to a proxy filing submitted to the SEC this September. The company ended 2016 with $3.53 billion in cash on hand. It gave its shareholders $227 million in dividends both last year and in 2015. As Smith indicated to CNBC, that's their CEO, he expects to use his company's tax windfall to expand those payments. So now you can say, hey, listen, they want to give money back to the shareholders, fine, no problem, that's their decision to make. They want to give their CEO a $15 million salary, no problem, that's their decision to make. But don't pretend you don't have cash because taxes are too high, because you have billions of dollars of cash on hand that if you wanted to, you could hire a ton of people with right now. You're just choosing not to hire more people. So let's understand that. But they say, don't worry, you give me tax cuts and I'll finally let go of my ransom or my hostages, and I will use some of that cash, which I already have. I don't need the tax cuts for, I already have them, right? I will use it to hire people. In fact, let's go to the CEO's quotes so that you know what they're saying. David Abney is UPS's CEO. He says, it's not about, okay, corporations would like to pay less taxes. Oh, no, no. It's about growing the American economy, creating jobs, and giving us all a chance to be competitive. You see that David Abney doesn't care about his profits. He's just a humanitarian. He wants to create jobs and grow the economy overall. That's why he wants the tax cuts. We'll find out if that's true in a second. Then we go to Fred Smith. He is the CEO of FedEx. He says, it's got to be changed for the US competitiveness and to incent investment in the United States, because that's the only way you get blue collar wages up. Really? You're concerned about your workers' wages? You know, you have all that cash on hand. You could just increase their wages right now. Instead of giving it to yourself, you could increase their wages. Instead of giving it to your shareholders, you could increase their wages. Again, I'm not arguing with you. You can do those things. But then don't go on TV and tell me, oh, golly gee, I can't raise wages until you lower taxes again. It's just not true. Smith also said, they both said it actually, in a letter that they wrote, an op-ed that they wrote to the Wall Street Journal. If you lower rates, eliminate loopholes, and otherwise simplify the tax code, you create opportunity for growth. Okay. All right. One last thing about what they say before we tell you what they actually do. Including in-house lobbying and work done by outside firms, FedEx has spent over $5.2 million on federal governmental lobbying in 2017, while UPS has spent nearly $4.3 million. Now, we tell you that because they say that they're doing it for the good of all of America, because they want to grow the economy, and for the good of their workers, they want to hire more people, increase their wages, etc. And that's why they're spending good lobbyist money to make sure that they look out for you, not them. No, 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 it's not about them. Really, so what did we do? We went and found out what they were saying in earnings calls. This is when they have to be truthful, in SEC filings, when they have to be truthful. And sometimes not only truthful, but bragging to their shareholders about how much money they're going to save them. So let's find out what they're actually doing. In June, FedEx, in the June FedEx earnings call, their chief financial officer and executive vice president, Alan Graf Jr., said FedEx Ground has made significant investments in capacity and automation, and will continue to invest in the next fiscal year. He said the company expects to spend $5.9 billion next year on capital expenditures, including new planes and continued investments in FedEx Ground automation and capacity expansion. You know what automation means? That means instead of having humans do the jobs, manual labor, they are going to automate the process and cut your jobs. No, no, it's not they don't have enough money. They said it in their own earnings call. They've got $5.9 billion to spend. Do I begrudge them buying new planes and updating their facilities? No. Look, I'm not even going to get into a discussion about whether they should automate or not. You know, maybe because of competitive pressures, they feel that they need to, or just because they want to make their shareholders richer. I understand that. But don't pretend that you're going to add jobs when you're saying in an earnings call that your plan is to cut jobs, is to automate things so that you don't need humans anymore. That's not all, we've got more. Now we go to Henry Maier, he's the FedEx Ground CEO and president. He says, we are making investments in material handling and lifting technologies to address that. We review hub designs over the normal course of business that account for package size. So that would divert packages, for instance, that we would have to handle manually today to a more automated mode. So there's FedEx bragging, we're going to turn everything into automation, and you guys are going to save a lot of money because we're not going to have that many jobs anymore for actual humans. You do whatever you like for your business. I'm not running your business. But when it comes to policy that affects us all, and look, we got to pay for everything anyway. It's not like that your taxes are getting cut by a lot. No, their taxes are getting cut by a lot. And what that does is it redistributes the tax burden. As I've shown you time and time again, companies used to make up more than a third of the taxes that were paid in 1952 in America. And how much the middle class paid was a lot less. Now, that's down to about 10, 11% that companies are paying. It's gone down by a third their tax burden relative to others. And what went up? The payroll tax. What that the middle class pays, the working poor pays, that has gone up tremendously over all these years. So they shifted the tax burden onto you. So you do whatever you want with your business, but when you go out in public and you lie about how you're going to create jobs, Well, then we're going to investigate and find out if that's true. And what we found out is that you are bragging internally about how you're going to automate everything. I'm not done yet. Now we go to UPS. Myron Gray is the senior vice president and president of US operations for UPS. He says UPS is mid-process of a multi-year approach to our automation process, but they are giving us 20% to 25% greater productivity. Yay, machines are better than humans. So we're going to cut. And he explains over the 3-year process. And by the way, you want all the details of this, please go read the entire article by Steve Horn. He did a great job here in giving you all the details. One last quote from UPS. They say, in order to meet demand, we are increasing capital expenditures to expand network capacity and increase productivity by automating existing facilities. We are making strategic investments in our top 30 processing hubs, as well as adding new facilities to our network. And then they go on to brag. A UPS representative told industry publication Logistics Management in November 2016 that the equipment used at the Atlanta hub will serve as, quote, a showpiece for us with new automation systems. It's a showpiece. They're so proud of it. And what they want to do is, yes, they still need humans to drive the boxes to their facilities and to drive the boxes out. But once you get inside the facility, and there's no showpiece in their new showpiece, it's all automated. They've eliminated almost all the jobs in those new facilities. You want to do that to save costs? I understand. You're running a business. I'm not begrudging you that. A lot of people might begrudge you that. That's not the point I'm making. I'm just saying, please have the decency to not lie to us in public and tell us that you're going to use it to create jobs. No, you want to lower taxes so you can have more money for yourself, for the shareholders, for the executives. You're going to take it home. And if you do any investments, it's going to be abroad or in automation. We know because we asked you. We looked into your filings and your statements, and that is the reality of it. So when they go on these publicity tours, and UPS held one for Republicans in one of their showpiece centers where they later will automate, they pretended that, oh my God, we're going to create all these jobs. Look at us in a factory with all these humans walking around. Later, they go and tell their shareholders, just kidding, we're going to try to cut all their jobs. But once we get the tax cuts, more money for all of us. That's the reality. So before your representatives go vote on those tax cuts, understand what they actually are. They aren't going to create any new jobs. They never have, and they won't. It's just to make the already rich and powerful even more rich and powerful. That's their real purpose, but that's a little embarrassing. That's why they don't say that on TV. They pretend they're doing it for you. All right. One last story for you guys. I'm in a mood today. So you want me angry when I'm doing this story. Okay. Politico with yet another article that is furthering establishment conventional wisdom. Wow, I couldn't have guessed that. This is the oldest trick in the book, and this is what they do every time. And by they, I don't mean Politico. I've seen this 1,000 times in the establishment press, and they're back at it. So the minute the progressives get any degree of strength or any wins, and now we have the most popular politician in the country on our side, that's Bernie Sanders, they have to rip him down, and they have to say, hey, progressives, don't get any smart ideas. The country is not going to go in your direction, and the so-called objective media is going to help push out this idea for the Democratic establishment. This is written by Alan Greenblatt. So the title of the piece is, Are Democrats Headed for a McGovern Redux? So this is the conventional wisdom that the establishment media puts out all the time. Two things they say that makes no sense and are completely antiquated. All politics is local. Tip O'Neill said that. Oh, congratulations that you remember that quote that everyone else in the world uses. And it's not remotely true. All politics was local when Tip O'Neill said it in the 1970s, when everyone read their local newspapers and there was no internet. All politics is not local now. It is not remotely local. That is just a statement you say because you haven't actually analyzed anything. And then this is what they say when it comes to progressives gaining any strength. Remember McGovern, Remember McGovern? Yes, we all know that was 1972. That wasn't 45 years ago. If you do the math, it sounds like it's 45. No, that was a million years ago when the country was completely different. But nonetheless, they say the party's presidential nominee, the ultra-liberal Senator George McGovern of South Dakota, went on to lose 49 states in one of the most lopsided victories in American history. Remember that in 1972 when McGovern lost to Nixon? Yes, I know. You remind me every single day, every time that any progressive has any momentum. McGovern, McGovern! 1972, are you kidding? Now look, to be fair to Greenblatt here, he did have one quote that at least acknowledges that it's a different country. He said, the white working class cast nearly three quarters of the vote back in 1972, notes Steve Phillips, founder of Democracy in Color, an organization focused on race and politics. Now it's well below half. So that is one of the things that makes it completely different than 1972. So when Nixon talked about the silent majority, they were in fact a majority. Gee, I wonder if that had something to do with winning all those elections. And in this article and in all these analyses, they never talk about how McGovern botched his vice presidential pick. And then that made a giant difference. So they just say, oh no, he was liberal and people don't like liberals. And so he mentions the demographics. What he doesn't mention is the polling and what the country actually thinks. So don't worry, guys. I have that for you and I'm going to share it with you because apparently the establishment press can't look up facts. So I'm going to help them, okay? So now he goes on to quote people that are part of the older generation of Democrats who are like, oh my God, don't ever run a liberal. So here's Frederick Logval, who apparently is a historian of sorts, still stuck in Vietnam era. He says, if the Democrats move to the left and focus on free tuition for college and single payer healthcare, I do get 1972 popping into my head. That, I mean, look, to be fair, you're a historian. Your job is to cover ancient history and that's what you're doing. But it's a totally different world. But that's an easy way to panic people. Remember 1972? Okay, here's another guy, Lawrence Jacobs, same idea. There is a radicalization going on within the Democratic Party that's a reaction to the last presidential election. It's being driven by a deep sense of aggrievement with regard to Republican behavior. No, we were aggrieved way before Donald Trump won. As Naomi Klein just told me in an interview I did earlier today, she said, if we go back to before Donald Trump, which is what the Democratic establishment wants, let's just go back to when times were normal. No, that's when times were so bad, we wound up electing Donald Trump. That is not a positive time to go back to. But it's not just based on that, it is about reality that the establishment is in fact rigging the system against the average American. The minimum wage is $7.25 at the federal level, that's insane. It hasn't kept up with inflation, it hasn't kept up with anything. And then you tell me because giant donors are putting money in and they'd like lower wages, they'd like deregulations, they'd like lower taxes. But you're telling me it's a coincidence that they get every single thing that they want. And then you call it radicalization to say, hey, maybe we should live in a democracy where the voters matter instead of the donors. By the way, I'm not alone on this. 93% of Americans think that the politicians represent their donors' interests over their voters' interests. Over 9 in 10 Americans believe that we have that kind of fundamental corruption. But not in Washington, not if you're a reporter or a historian or a political scientist. They're all like, oh, that's radical. Radical to say that these guys are sellouts who work for donors. And that's why you never see it on television. Now I'm going to get to the numbers again in a second. So bear with me as I give you one more maddening quote from the author here. He said, now this is him. He's not quoting anyone else. He said, consumed by internecine battles and the idea of opposition, Democrats run the risk of again nominating someone like McGovern who pleases progressives but steers a course too far from the country's center of political gravity to win. Because if you live in Washington, the political center of gravity is center right. And the right wing is right about everything. And the Democrats, if they have enough sense, will bow their heads and listen to them. Now, is that actually true? No, it's not remotely true. So let me quote a number of polls for you. Expanding Social Security. Not cutting Social Security, which is what the so-called moderates want to do in Washington. No, expanding Social Security is supported by 72% of Americans. Giant advantage there. Raising taxes on the rich, 52% of Americans supported. They don't support cutting taxes, they support raising taxes on the rich. If you think that that is a radical position, then you just call the majority of Americans radical. Increase in military spending by cutting state and EPA funding? Nope, Americans don't want it. They'd rather have EPA funding and state funding rather than military spending. They 58% oppose that. That is a giant majority saying, no, I don't want more military spending. I would rather have environmental spending. But you'll never see that in a mainstream publication. It's CNN's poll. They never even quote their own poll. They mentioned it the first time it came out and then go on and have all their pundits, just like Politico and everybody else, go out and go, oh, no, no, the country loves defense spending. Country loves defense spending. It's just not true, but they say it anyway. Raising the minimum wage to $10.10. Oh, that's only supported by 66% of Americans. Only 26% oppose. Two-thirds of the country says, for God's sake, raise the minimum wage. You ever see that on TV? You ever see that on Politico? No, they call that radical. You're calling two-thirds of the country radical? Who's the actual radical? My proposal is that the establishment in Washington, whether it's the media or the Republicans or the Democratic establishment, you are the true radicals because you represent a tiny, tiny percentage of the country. The donors that give money to those parties and the ones that also put ads in your publications and on your television sets. Where do you think all the political advertising goes to? It goes to television, cable news, and a lot of these esteemed publications inside of Washington. So they're incentivized to call two-thirds of the country radical, when in reality, they represent that tiny percentage who want tax cuts for the rich, even though the rest of them don't want it. They want more defense contractors, etc. But I'm not done yet with the polls, because we are right and you are wrong. Okay? Medicare for all, 60% supported. That's radical? 60% of the country supports it. He just called it radical, said that's not the center of gravity in the country. Well, you're absolutely, positively wrong on the numbers. Okay, immigration reform. 90% support pathway to citizenship, according to CNN. Do you get that sense when you turn on TV or you read Politico? Gay marriage, 64% supported. Legalizing marijuana, what gets laughed at in Washington, 61% of the country supports it. You are wrong and we are right. Not because we have differing opinions, we are right about where the center of the country is. It's based on numbers. It's based on statistics, it's based on science. And now you will hilariously see the establishment press that are aggrieved by us pointing out facts, turn around and go, oh, polling. Even though they use polling 1,000 times, 100,000 times. And they've yelled at Republicans sometimes that question the polling. They will now turn around and go, oh, polling. You can't trust polling. I mean, you're just cherry picking. Cherry picking, I just showed you almost every single issue. Here, you cherry pick. See if you can find polls that are different than this. See if you can find the average of polls on these issues. We are right and you are wrong. You are the radical. You represent the tiny minority. We represent the majority. It is not 1972. It's the year 2017. And progressives will win and we will get an ideology that actually matches the true center of the country. And I know you're never, ever going to write that. Because it's not that Alan Greenblatt's a bad guy, of course not. I don't want you to get the wrong idea, or these political scientists, they're not bad guys. They're just inside their bubble and they can't see straight. Everyone, I was just in Washington, it happens every time I go to Washington. Everyone in Washington thinks the establishment is awesome and things will always remain the same. And anyone who doesn't agree that we should give all the money to defense contractors, all the money to the oil companies, all the money to the banks, and crush the wages and do all the other things. Anyone who doesn't believe that is a radical, radical populist. Oh my God. The country's with us. And you wonder why politicians poll so low and why the media poll so low. It is partly the Republican attacks, of course. You have to take that into account. But that's not the only thing. They sleep better at night by saying, oh no, it's unfair Republican attacks. No, the rest of the country does not trust the establishment press because they are correct. Because that press keeps lying to them over and over again, telling them things that aren't true, even though they are the exact opposite of what is true. We're sick of it. You think you're cute and you're fooling people. The only person you're fooling honestly is yourself, because they really do believe it in Washington. They think that the country is center right and that we'd all be better off if we just did everything the donors wanted. Well, the rest of us are in open revolt to that. We can't stand that anymore. So who's right, who's wrong? We'll see you at the next election. And all their crying isn't going to prevent progressive primaries. We're going to primary the living hell out of them, because this is what's killing the country. We're not going to let you get away with it anymore. And this isn't 1972. We're going to win, Young Turks.